Okay. Oh, we're rolling. Okay.
You did hit the
I
record
did hit
button.
the recording button. Good job, Jen. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Shipping and Handling. I am your host, Jennifer Udden.
And I'm your co-host, Bridget Smith.
We're already 45 minutes deep into this recording session, so we might get a little silly. Bridget's already a glass in, so who knows what might happen.
Woo! Jen is, again, not drinking tonight. So.
To my everlasting sadness, but I'm trying to lose weight, and the wine makes me crave sweet, sweet pizza.
Yeah.
So it's kind of antithetical. So we were having kind of trouble just deciding what to talk about on tonight's episode, and y'all had some good suggestions. But ultimately, we decided to do a little bit of a because everything that I wanted to talk about, Bridget sort of doesn't really know about, and everything Bridget wanted to talk about, I didn't really know about. So we decided to play a little game called "Why Do You Read That?"
Yes.
So Bridget reads a lot of middle grade. I do not.
Mm-hmm.
I read a lot of romance.
I do not.
She really does not. So we're going to talk a little bit about the things that she's going to interrogate me. I'm going to interrogate her.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to talk about the places where we overlap and also the ways that we don't even overlap in those.
Yes. In genres. Those areas.
So Bridget, why do you read middle grade?
I suppose part of the reason I read middle grade is because I have very vivid memories of being 11. I can put myself in sixth grade Bridget's shoes very easily.
Your wrist just made a really weird noise.
My shoulder cracked real loud.
Oh my God. My hips sometimes make that noise, but I'm older than you, so girl,
also,
get that checked.
Also, I think it happened right next to the microphone, so you lucky listeners may have heard that as well.
It came from inside her body.
Yes, so I can remember sixth grade very well. Sixth grade, I started a new school, which so did all of my classmates, but for some reason I found it.
But it's only new to me.
Yes, everyone else knows what they're doing. It's just me that is confused and overwhelmed.
You mean that feeling ends?
No.
Sometimes?
That feeling never ends.
Fuck.
I still feel that way.
Oh my God.
So I distinctly remember that. I remember the books that I was reading when I was 11. Sidebar, A Tale of Two Cities, not really suitable for 11-year-olds, even when they're really ambitious and smart. I could not get more than 50 pages into that book while I was trying to read it under the desk in social studies.
You're like, even as escapism, this is terrible.
No.
Social studies is more interesting.
They spell jail so weird.
Oh, right. It's gowl.
Yes.
How do you pronounce it, like, out loud?
I think you just say jail.
English, get it together.
Right?
Okay.
Dumbest language ever.
Sure, Jan.
So I remember the books I was reading. I remember one of my, I made a bunch of friends in sixth grade who are still my friends. And I remember my sixth grade science teacher very strongly. She and I had a very strong bond. She was also really into marine biology and had like six fish tanks in her classroom. So I was really into that, as you can imagine. And she loved that I was into that and sponsored me for a whole bunch of cool things. And I also had my very first sort of overwhelming crush when I was in sixth grade. So all of these things sort of come together to mean that I can put myself back in those shoes very easily. I can remember that whole stew of feelings very well. I think that was also, that was not when I read Harry Potter for the first time, but it was when I renamed all of my classes after Harry Potter classes so that I could sort of imagine I was at Hogwarts. Mm. and I suppose that also gets to Harry Potter is a big reason why I read middle grade. The first Harry Potter book deals with being 11 and being, because he starts at a new school. You start at a new school when you go into sixth grade. All of those sort of things where you're trying to make new friends and a little overwhelmed by all of the classes, but sort of starting to get your footing. That sense of being trusted as not a baby anymore is very strong. And so I really enjoy that. I also really enjoy, like, first ever crushes in middle grade. All that said, I do tend to prefer a little bit more sophisticated middle grade. So, for example, my client, Lee Jertsen Malone, who wrote The Last Boy at St. Edith's, which came out from Simon & Schuster this year, she initially wrote that as a YA. And so when she turned it into a middle grade, she cut the romance out for the most part. She cut out a lot of things and aged them down from 10th grade to 7th grade. And it works a lot better for what the book is, but it also means that it's a tiny bit more mature, a little bit more sophisticated in the writing. And that's something that I value because, you know, when I was in sixth grade, I was trying to read A Tale of Two Cities.
Well, it's so interesting that, you know, you look back on those sort of like that maelstrom of feelings with fondness, because I look back on that maelstrom of feelings like just remembering how fucking awful it was.
See, no, that's it. I don't look back on it with fondness. I remember how terrible it was and how much books got me through it.
Oh.
And so that's why I look for books that might also help other 11-year-olds through how terrible that year is.
Yes. You know, I don't actually remember a whole lot of it, because I remember sort of being unrelentingly miserable.
Yeah.
I got a really unattractive haircut in 7th grade, and I went to a public school in Texas where I got mercilessly teased for it. I also did not switch schools, because I went to a school that was K through 8.
Oh.
So I started in 3rd grade, and then I stayed basically with the same people. And we were in what they called clusters. So, like, there was, like, a sort of central area and then, like, five classrooms. And then we would sort of, like, switch classes during the day.
Yeah.
Which was nice because there was some variety. But it did mean that there was, like, the same people around all the time.
My hometown had 4 elementary schools and then 1 middle school and 1 high school. So you are combined with a whole bunch of new people for the first time. But they split us up. We had teams. So we had 3 teams of about 100 kids each, and you took classes with all those same kids. I know people from some of my friends, actually, that I'm still friends with, were on a different team because one of my elementary school friends became friends with them and then sort of brought us all together. It's partly that I remember how hard sixth grade was. Also, I distinctly remember, this is another thing that brings me back there, was I read Ella Enchanted when I was in fifth grade, and I was like, I don't really get this. I don't know why they all told me to read this. Like, this is not that great. It's really unpleasant. Why does she have to turn him down? Like, I don't understand. It's so sad. And then at the end of sixth grade, I read it again, and I got it. It absolutely clicked for me.
Whereas I tried reading it last year, and I was like, she has no control over her own life. This freaks me out. Bye. Just like, nope.
That's
out.
What the whole point of the story
is,
though.
Oh my god, I just, you know.
That's why it's so wonderful.
Yeah.
I actually used that. I gave a talk on a webinar on agency recently, and I used that as one of the examples, because the story is about her claiming agency in her own life. I think it was specifically, like, I remember that turning point. And so I can put myself back there and remember the things that made that click for me. And so that's part of one of the things that I enjoy in middle grade books is figuring out the moments that where you change, where you grow up a little bit.
Yeah. Cool.
So, Jen, why do you read romance?
Oh, my God. It's going to sound so much worse compared to your answer. I mean, I basically read romance for escapism, you know, honestly. Like, you know, I started reading romances probably when I was, I mean, openly when I was, like, in college, but secretly when I was younger than that, because I didn't want to be caught buying them because I was embarrassed.
Oh, yes.
But I would go to the library and just, like, stay all day by the little rotating racks that had the mass market, you know, paperbacks on them. And, you know.
That's a really cute thing to imagine, just by the way.
Just, like, lurking by the.
Tiny Jen lurking by the romance novels.
I was not that tiny, and it was it was not cute. But, and I also have.
Let's be honest, none of us were cute in high school.
I don't know. Some people were cute.
Some people were. I was not.
I look back. You know, I actually recently looked back at my like middle school yearbooks and stuff. I was just like, you know, was I really as fuggo as I remember? I was. Yeah. It was really awkward.
Yep. At least it justifies how awkward you felt when you were that age. It's like I was not.
Although I sometimes worry that like I sort of think of myself as like, you know, this sort of put upon like teased person, and I'm really
worried. Maybe you were secretly the bully.
And maybe I was secretly Tina Fey when she's like, you're all the worst, I hate you. And they're like, oh my god, you're a monster. So if you knew me in middle school and you can prove either way, like, please, I guess, don't let me know, because I don't know that I would.
Nope, keep that secret forever.
I was actually talking to one of my clients, and you know, she was having a call with an editor, and she was like, yeah, you know, it went fine, but, you know, I know that I'm going to be lying awake, you know, tonight thinking about what I should have said. And I was just like, oh, just today? I mean, my brain goes to, like, the deep cuts from, like, 2004. Like, remember that time you made a total ass of yourself? Like,
yeah, I try not to think about, like, 10th grade ever.
Oh, God.
It was real bad.
So many parts of my life that I'd, like, elide from my memory. But yeah, so I read these sort of like cheesy historical ones, and this was sort of back in the era when they were still publishing sort of like pretty rapey, like, you know. And my dad, I think, has read one romance novel in his entire life, and it was a rapey one.
Oh, good.
And the only line he remembers, which sometimes he trots out, is "At dawn, he took her again." I'm like, Dad, please never use those words again.
Don't, Dad.
But he just, you know, he sort of just thinks of them as very sort of like exploitative and terrible. Oh. And it doesn't help that the first ones that I latched onto were the ones by Victoria Holt, which are all like inexplicably set in Cornwall. And they all...
Was she from Cornwall?
I don't know. I think I've never Googled it because I'm afraid to learn that she wasn't.
Yeah.
Or that she was and she was some kind of like weird Cornish separatist. And I'm just like, I just don't want to know. But I know she had another pen name, so I'm sure she wrote, you know, other stuff. But but her protagonists were all these, you know, girls who sort of like felt terrible about themselves, who sort of inexplicably ended up in these relationships with these like super hot guys. So
so 50 Shades of Grey.
No, but like I mean, I want to say yes, but no. Like
okay.
Because they were characters.
Yes, that is an important distinction.
You know, they were, yeah. You know. But I remember one of them, I can't, and they all have, like, they all, you know, Cornwall is, like, the most hilarious place in England because they all have the dumbest place names. I'm sorry for anyone who's from Cornwall, but it's hilarious for someone who's from America. I mean, granted, we have, you know, ridiculously named places, too.
We do.
But, like, one of them is called Menfreya in the Morning. Menfreya being, like, the estate that this woman lives on. Mm-hmm. And then the other one is Mistress of Mellon is the one I remember. M-E-L-L-Y-N. I know. I'm just like, I don't want to say this out loud. But, you know, one of them is about this governess who, like, goes to take care of this kid, and it's sort of like a Jane Eyre situation. Mm. You think it's a Jane Eyre situation, and then it turns out it's not, but it's, like, creepy in a different way.
Oh, good.
But, you know, she has sort of this, like, inferiority complex, and...
And so those sound very much like sort of the wish fulfillment.
Oh,
thing
very much wish fulfillment. So when I was older and I sort of turned to like modern romance, the thing I liked about it was you still had that moment of like not being sure if they were going to get together, because there's always sort of like the plot where there's like the thing that's, you know, getting in
keeping
the way of the relationship. Yeah. And, you know, I really sort of liked being on that edge of like, oh no, this isn't going to work out, which is like all the fan fiction I love is like wallows and kind of like the garbage feeling for a little bit.
The angst.
Yes. Angst and ust, you know, just
love
give it to me.
Unrequited love. One of my favorite
things. Yeah. You know, pining.
Yep.
Just give me pining. And I'm just, which is why my favorite Jane Austen novel is honestly Persuasion.
Persuasion is amazing.
It's amazing.
I love
Oh my
Persuasion.
God. I actually was recently reminded of the existence of the 1995 version with, yeah, 95, with Amanda Root and Kieran Hines, which is, like, one of the most perfect adaptations. Like,
I think I may have bought that DVD in, like, a sale for, like, $2.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've watched it yet, which means I need to.
Do yourself a favor. I mean, Kieran Hines is, like, you know, in the 90s, they were casting these, like, you know, objectively ugly people to play sort of like love interest in British
True
movies.
Facts.
But he's sort of handsome in this like austere, like I have to take to the sea now kind of way.
Incidentally, you have seen Miss Pettigrew Lives for a Day, right?
Yes. Oh my god.
Oh my god.
I love that movie so much.
Okay.
So let's put a pin in that because I feel like we could do a whole episode on
that. We can revisit that.
But Lee Pace and his little accent. He's so cute. I love him. But yeah, so I sort of graduated to that kind of thing. But then, you know, I found like Nora Roberts and then I found like all the sort of like the Wild West of like contemporary romance, because there's so much out there now. And I feel like as I've gotten older, I've sort of found like all these areas. Like I found romantic suspense and I'm like, oh my God, romantic suspense is so great. But at the core of it, it's about these relationships and, they're entirely predictable, because if you get to the end of a romance novel and they don't end up together, I feel deeply betrayed.
Yeah.
Like the only people who can really get away with it are the people who are now doing these, like in the wake of 50 Shades, we now have these series of like, you know, the Sylvia Day books and, you know, these kinds of things where like, you know, it's like a series where you're not sure if they're going to get together or like, you know, if they're going to stay together. But it's always about that. And I just really love that. And also, you know, I love reading something that I can read in one go. Like I can read a romance in 2 hours and it's amazing.
Okay.
You know,
it's like watching a movie. This is why I actually do really enjoy romantic comedy movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For that exact reason, where it's like, oh, that's, you get two charming people who I really like and I just want them to be happy together.
Now kiss.
Now.
My sister and I have been rewatching season one of Miss Fisher. So we got to the last episode of season one last night where she like faints and he like carries her out of like the Egyptian tomb. And then that guy inexplicably does not bleed to death, which is what I 100% thought he was gonna do. But anyway, sorry.
Yeah. I cannot quite figure out why I like romantic comedies so much, but I do not like romance novels.
Well, I think it also depends on like what was the first romance you read and like, because I feel like, at least for me for a long time, I had this very narrow idea of what a romance novel was.
Well, I can tell you what the first romance novel I read was. I do not remember what the title is, or the author for that matter.
I was going to Google it.
Maybe one of our fabulous listeners will recognize it from its description, because the main character's name is Bridget. It's a historical set in Scotland, and my friend Valerie sat behind me in history class, and so she made me read it because the heroine's name is Bridget, and she has curly brownish blondish hair, and so my hair basically sat on her desk during history class, and she was always thinking about this book because of my hair. She was like, you need to read this book. And Bridget unknowingly gets married to this naturally very handsome Scottish guy.
Mm-hmm. As one does.
She's like threatened with kidnapping and all of these things. And so she has to marry this guy in order to protect her, but she doesn't realize that that's what's happening. And so it's all very complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And so Valerie was like, you need to read this. And I enjoyed it. I didn't hate it. I just didn't have any feelings other than, hey, it's me.
And, I mean, one of the things, too, that I find these days is, like, I now have very particular tastes about the kinds of romance I like.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, even though my sort of definitions of the things that I like in romance has expanded, it really hasn't expanded that much. For example, Scotland, I cannot do. They're always calling people Laird and Lassie. And I'm just like, you sound stupid right now. And I think it's because, and this is my theory as to why you like rom-coms and not books, is because some of those things written out look stupid.
Yes. I agree.
But they sound hilarious when someone's saying it to someone else. They sound, like, entertaining.
Yeah.
But, like, for me, you know, if the book is right, I don't mind the sort of silliness of it, you know?
I think,
like, there obviously aren't as many dukes in England as there are in Regency romance novels, but, like,
no.
Too many dukes.
They should all be baronets, honestly. But yeah, no, I think that that's what it is. Is I read it and I'm like, these things sound dumb, but if you give them to a charismatic actor, I'm much more willing to get swept away by it.
You know, I don't know. I think I don't want to say that, you know, you just haven't found the right one yet because, you know, you've only read one. But
I've read a few.
Mm-hmm.
That was just the first. That was when I was in 11th grade.
Yeah. Well, I think, too, that, like, as I've gotten older and, like, you know, I don't know. Even things that I'm not really, like, super into, like, I don't really love super hardcore erotica.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, in the hands of someone whose work I really like,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm just like, yeah, I'll read this BDSM club novel. Totally. Like, Rebecca Weatherspoon has this great trilogy. It's, like, it's called the Fit Trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the covers are all, like, abtacular. And it's sort of centered around this, like, S&M club. And I'm really, like, really not, like, I don't, it just, S&M just, like, doesn't do it for me in romance. It's a big thing right now. It just feels so procedural to me. I'm like, there's so many steps. Can y'all just have sex already? But she's a great writer.
Way to take the romance out of it.
Exactly. But she's a great writer. So, like, you know, I'll sort of go there. But, like, mm-hmm. if she did Scotland, I wouldn't go there. I wouldn't go to Scotland. But, so I don't know if that's, like, the best way of explaining why I read romance. But, like, I just really love it. So.
There you go. Honestly, in the last few years, I've had people recommend romances to me based on things that I like or based on things about me. I read one solely because it had a 6-foot heroine, and I was like, oh, great. I love, there's a genuine thing that's the tall girl sisterhood. Ask me about that time I hung out with Liz Garinsky and Sarah Reese
Brennan. Oh, you've told me about that time, and I'm infuriated because I wasn't there, so I just don't want to talk about it.
Well, you were at Sirens. So.
I was not at Sirens. I was at Emerald City.
Oh, that's right. You were at the other conference in the Pacific Northwest.
I mean, it was fun, but, like, I saw all those pictures, and I was just like, I wish I were there. Brennan and all these people.
And that Scott Westerfeld at that
party.
Oh,
my God, shut up.
It was so cool.
Okay, that's cool.
What the heck?
The fuck? I don't know if y'all can hear this, listeners. Is there a creature in your wall?
I don't know. Oh my god.
The call.
This is like an Edgar Allan Poe story right now.
Oh my god.
There's like grandfather clock rat in the piano. Wait, I don't. Something in the heating.
There's something in the heating.
There's something in the heating.
That's horrifying.
Yes. Yes.
Because I'm not going to fucking investigate.
No.
And we have to do the rest of this podcast.
In this room with the heating and the thing in the heating.
Oh, God. Listeners, this podcast might be cut short because we're too terrified to stay in this room. Well, yeah, so I guess wrapping up call is coming from inside the house. You know, romance for me is just purely escapist literature.
And I think that for me, that quality in books does not work quite as well. I am totally willing to get on board with purely escapist TV and movies, but I want something else from my books.
Hmm.
You're a snob. Yeah, well, this is true and proven.
No. So why don't we move on to the areas of overlap?
Sure.
So we both read YA.
Yes.
We both read science fiction and fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
Both read some limited literary fiction.
Yes.
So why are you drawn to YA and sci-fi fantasy? And
Well, the part of the reason I'm drawn to YA is because, so I've told you about how I can put myself in 11-year-old Bridget's shoes. I can also put myself in 17-year-old Bridget's shoes very easily. And part of that is because I have very strong memories of reading The Blue Sword by Robin McKinley and, like, having my brain fall into place. I remember being a very self-hating teenager.
Oh yeah. High five. Oh,
super. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so part of that, this is part of why I'm like Chime all the time, is because I think that Chime does a really wonderful job of showing what that looks like. And so that feeling is still very strong and I can remember it very clearly. And so I find books that deal with one of the things that I cared about when I was 17. Really compelling.
Because mm-hmm.
I I can remember the way it feels.
Yeah. I think I like YA because a lot of it, I would say I mostly read like fantasy or sci-fi YA.
Mm-hmm.
I don't read as much contemporary because I really like seeing teenagers do cool things that I could never do. You know?
This is why when I was in high school, I did not read any books that were set in high school.
It's still happening.
Oh my God.
There is this noise. It's like skittering. I mean, it's really
it's like a rat in a piano.
It's really
is actually
horrifying.
What it sounds like. And there's no piano in here, which is why it's so terrifying.
The piano has been drinking. I think it's interesting that, you know, we both read sci-fi fantasy, and yet there have been sort of big books of the last 2 years that you and I have just really not agreed on at all. I would say one of them is probably Uprooted.
Oh,
which,
yes.
Which you loved, and I was sort of like, meh.
Yeah.
I like it, but eh.
And I can completely understand, or like, I can see when we discuss
which makes me feel disloyal to Naomi Novik, who I love deeply. But,
yeah. And when we discuss Uprooted, I can completely see where you're coming from with your problems. And I can be like, yeah, I have no counter argument to that. But I just didn't mind it. And it's partly because Uprooted reminded me very strongly of all of the Robin McKinley books that I read in my childhood.
I got an email from Ticketmaster going like, Beyonce, the Formation World Tour update. I was like, no! The time is different.
Okay.
Thank God. Sorry. Priorities. One moment, please. Anyway, say that again.
Part of the reason I really loved Uprooted is because it reminded me very strongly of all of the Robin McKinley books I read when I was a teenager. It's similarly stylized, I guess, and the character interactions are also very similar, and the way she conflates the real world and the fairy tale world and sort of just mushes them together and is like, this is what it looks like now, and you're gonna go with it. That is something that I respond to very strongly. Also, that's also something I like about the Daughter of the Forest series by Juliette Marillier.
I haven't read that.
It's set in like Fantasyland Ireland, which is, it's called Ireland and England and all of that, but it's also sort of like, this is not really historical. And so it takes the fairy tales and a little bit of the history and sort of mashes them together. And it's like, there, this is what the world looks like now. Deal with it.
Yeah.
Like, okay, sure. Great.
Whereas for me, you know, Uprooted, you know, it was a very engaging read. You know, she's always, you know, she's a great writer. But for me, like, I just didn't, you know, those characters just didn't feel interesting to me.
Okay.
You know, I felt like I had seen that sort of girl who discovers that she's super good at stuff and like rides off into the night to save the day. Like, I felt like I had read that story before, and like the dude wasn't compelling enough to sort of like, you know, stand up against that. I don't know. I mean, I keep thinking that I should go back and give it another try because like so many people that I like really respect have been like, you're wrong. You're incorrect for not adoring this
book.
This
is sort of how I feel about Graceling. If we're being perfectly honest.
Oh, really? I haven't read it. I have it, but I haven't read it.
Well, I read Graceling. Okay, I read The Hunger Games and Catching Fire, and then I read Graceling. The Mockingjay was not out yet, so that sets this in time for you. And it was just, there were too many similarities between The Hunger Games and Graceling, and I just, like, couldn't process it. I didn't like it. And I felt like I'd read it before a bunch of times, and it just did not click for me. But I've had so many people tell me how much they love Graceling that I'm considering going back and revisiting it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting too. Like, you know, it so much depends on like the time in your life that you read it, you know, what you're going through. I mean, for example, the first time I read a Lord Peter Wimsey novel. My mom told me to start with Nine Tailors because it's the sort of least kind of like plotty. And I was like, well, it's the least plotty, which means it's the most boring.
Yes.
He is literally ringing bells for the first 100 fucking pages of this book. Like, Jesus Christ. But I tried him again in college, and then I got to all the Harriet Vane stuff, and I was just like, oh my God, they're perfect. And interestingly, to go back a little bit to the romance discussion, that sort of like inferiority complex thing is like very much a thing in the Harriet Vane, Peter Wimsey stories. And she sort of has to get over it in this way that doesn't like negate her feelings at all.
Nice.
Whereas in, you know, so many of those romance novels, it's like, don't worry, when you're rich in my, you know, charming Belgravia mansion, you won't mind that you were a scullery maid once, you know? Like, it sort of actually makes you deal with those feelings.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, if I had read Uprooted, you know, at a different time, or if I had read it, like, slower, or, given it a little bit more thought, you know, would I have liked it more?
Yeah.
Or given it less thought, honestly. I think sometimes I just overthink things.
Oh, I also feel that feeling. But yeah.
When I love something, I'm just like, Muppet face. Yes.
Let me just talk about all the ways I love this. And sometimes it's just read it now. But yeah, I mean, that's exactly what happened to me, as I mentioned earlier, with Ella Enchanted, where I read it the first time and I didn't get it. And then I read it a year later and it completely made sense to me. Just like an emotionally resonant sense that I hadn't gotten before.
But this is what I worry about. I worry that I'm getting older. Mm. You know, I have less time to read.
Yeah.
So nowadays, you know, if I take a chance on rereading something, I'm rereading something because I just like,
I just really want to reread it.
Yeah. I'm about to reread Busman's Honeymoon for like the 9th time.
I reread Howl's Moving Castle because I was reaching my 10,000 day mark and wanted to.
She had a great party. It was fabulous.
Thanks, Jen. And so I wanted to reread this book that had inspired me to count to when I turned or when I reached 10,000 days. And then I sort of got stuck on Diana Wynne Jones, and I reread Deep Secret as well. And I've just absolutely loved it. But it's also, you know, this is a super indulgent reread. It's the emotional equivalent of staying in bed all day.
Yeah.
That's not re-examining feelings that I had.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I don't know. Uprooted might have to wait from a desert island because currently, so the next on my list is still King's Rising. And then, as soon as I get through my reading, it's going to be Raven Boys.
Ah, yes.
And thank you, fucking Tumblr, for fucking spoiling the end of the fucking Raven King for me. I hate you. Die in a fire.
I haven't seen it. Please do not tell me what happens.
Oh, no, I won't. I've like,
thank you for being a good friend.
I've tried to like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind myself, but like, you know, I have all these things, and like, it just someone answered a question on Tumblr. You know how you can, you know, do asks and it's like blah blah blah, and I was like, no! But well, let's move on to questions because I think we have a couple. Okay, so we have a question on email from someone who wants to remain anonymous.
Okay.
Hi, guys. I love your show. I listen to it while I cook sometimes. Okay, my question is, I've had a lot of agent interest, let's say about 20 or so requests for 50-ish queries sent, with many queries still pending. Mm-hmm. But so far, I've only had rejections come from those requests. At what point should I pull back and stop querying? So many people have said all the requests, and mostly positive feedback I've gotten means I'm close, but it sure does not feel that way. Stress emojis. I was thinking of working on a general revision with some people who've never seen the book to see if that helps. Good idea or bad idea? Thanks.
I think the very first question here is, what kind of feedback are you getting on the full rejections? If they're all saying the same thing, then yes, go look at that, see what you can do, revise. But if they're all saying different things, I was telling Jen earlier that one of my clients got a rejection saying there was too much of this thing and another rejection saying there was not enough of this thing. So obviously those are just personal taste and there's nothing you can really do about that because you've written the book that you've written. But if you're getting a lot of people saying this issue did not work for me, the way that this played out, the emotions in this plot point, I thought didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, it's helpful to go back and revisit it.
Yeah. And I think it's also helpful to see, you know, of the requests you got, you know, which, you know, who only saw 50 pages? Because if they only saw 50 pages and they passed on 50 pages, then you know where the problem is. It's in the first 50 pages. If they saw the whole thing and they gave, you know, actual feedback, then, you know, you can sort of take that into account. The one thing I would say, though, is, you know, I am always a little bit wary about doing revisions with someone who's never seen the book before. If you don't also know what their thoughts, if you never worked with them before on anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know what the situation is with this person, but if she was just finding, like, new people that, you know, she necessarily hadn't.
Yeah.
I shouldn't use pronouns to keep this fucking anonymous. If they were using,
well, is it Merriam-Webster that now accepts they as a
they? Yes.
Which honestly, anything that solves the she/he problem, I am 100% on board. 100%. I hate that so much.
It's so annoying. So if they're finding someone new to work with who, you know, hasn't, you know, that they've never worked with before, mm-hmm. you know, I wouldn't know if that person could trust that person's advice. Yeah. Like, how do you know that they're going to give, like, good advice if you've never, like, worked with them before?
I do think it's valuable to find someone who hasn't read the book
before. Yeah, like a fresh eye.
That is what how agents are seeing it.
Yeah.
And so your usual betas who are looking at it and saying, oh, this is better than before, doesn't necessarily mean it's good.
Yeah.
And so I think that that can be a hard thing to figure out. But it's someone, yeah, I do hear what Jen is saying when she says, do you know this person's feedback is valuable? Just in general.
Yeah. The other thing I would say is that, you know, look at the list of who you're querying. And, you know, if you've reached the end of people that you would actually want to represent you, mm-hmm. then, yeah, by all means, like, stop querying.
Yeah.
You should be working on your next project anyway, like, while,
yep.
while you're waiting. So, you know, maybe while you're waiting for the last request to come in, mm-hmm. you know, or last feedback to come in, you're working on the new thing. Because I think that querying just for the sake of querying doesn't, mm-hmm.
yeah,
help
doesn't
anybody.
Help anyone.
You know. Yeah. You end up with an agent who's just like, oh, yeah, I'll sign this. And then you're sure. badly yeah. represented and everything's terrible.
I'd also think about just how many people have rejected the full manuscript. Because it sounds to me like it may have been about 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is not that much at all. Especially if they're all giving different feedback.
Yeah.
And so it's yeah.
I mean, I've definitely been in situations where, you know, I've been on submission with a project and I've, you know, collected all the feedback that I've gotten from editors, you know, and I've sent it to my client and said, you know, none of this really agrees with each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I had like a definite thing
Everyone
to tell you.
Everyone hates this one thing.
Then I would say that we were going to go back to the drawing board. But like, I don't have a definite thing. So I don't want to change the book just for funsies, just to see if it worked. And it sold eventually. I mean, you have to sort of like know your own work and know what you're comfortable doing. But, you know, definitely just write the next thing and sort of let this one sort of take care of itself, because you never know.
And maybe if you, you know, sit on it while writing the next thing, you'll revisit it in 6 months and say, oh, I see what the problem is.
Yeah, because sometimes time is all you need.
Yeah,
time and distance.
Time and working on something else. Sometimes the things that you learn working on a new project can help you solve the problem in the old one that you didn't even see.
So I'm not sure if this person wants to remain anonymous or not. I'll just say his name is Jeremy.
Okay.
So dear Bridget and Jennifer, got a question from you. This is a little bit long. Got a question for you. First of all, love the podcast. Love what you guys are doing.
Thanks.
It gets me through those long days at work. The only bad thing about your show is that there are aren't more episodes. Please remedy that. Also, super jealous of all the wine you guys get to drink. Today it is I who is jealous, Jeremy. Okay, the question. I want to ask about author branding. I wrote a YA SF novel that garnered a lot of attention from major agents, but ultimately couldn't get representation. Mm. To shake things up, I wrote a YA epic fantasy, and about two-thirds of the way through, I realized that ultimately I like science fiction a lot more and want to be published under that genre, mm-hmm. to the point where I hated the new book and hated fantasy as a whole.
That's
legit.
Yep.
I finished it and decided we needed to see other novels before going through revision, so I packed it away to put
We needed to see other novels.
I'm very tired, guys. So I packed it away to put some distance between us. And now I'm imagining this novel going like, baby, come back. You can blame it all on me.
I'm picturing maps. I love you.
Wait. I will obviously attempt to get an agent through this book, and I know that agents represent authors and not novels per se, but some stupid part of my brain imagines that if this novel does get me an agent and then a publisher, I'll be expected to write more books in the fantasy genre, either as a sequel or new books. It's a very big if, and ultimately I'm happy to be writing in both, but getting pigeonholed into writing fantasy when I'd much rather be writing science fiction is a publishing nightmare I don't want to see come around. I can't imagine having my beloved other novels sitting on my hard drive collecting dust when a novel I'm so keen on going through the rounds. Okay, to complicate things further, I'm currently writing an adult space opera, and I'd imagine that having 24 science fiction short stories published doesn't help either. Is this a genuine concern, or am I just being paranoid as all hell? Maybe this is relevant to the non-disclosure and right of refusal clause you guys spoke about a couple of episodes back. All the best, and keep filling up those wine glasses.
So here's what I am going to say. Is write your adult space opera and query that.
Yes.
Partly because YA science fiction is really tough to sell.
Yeah. One of the reasons that your book probably didn't go is because YA science fiction
is really very hard
tough
to sell.
Yeah. It's very tough.
YA fantasy is relatively easy to sell, but if that's not where your heart is, if writing it makes you hate it, that's not what you should be doing.
Yeah. Like hate packing your book is not a good, you know.
No.
Write, vibe.
Write your adult space opera, because adult science fiction is not the same kind of level of difficulty as YA science fiction.
Yeah, in terms of selling it. And also, if you, you know, get chops in that area.
That's the gender.
Oh, thank God.
Oh, the God. Thing did not get free.
Oh, my God. Oh, God. Oh, God. So I think that you can also cross over a lot easier from, like, adult science fiction to YA science fiction, if that makes sense.
Just ask Joe Abercrombie.
Yeah, Joe Abercrombie. Although he writes fantasy.
He writes fantasy.
He's grimdark. But
he has crossed over from adult fantasy to YA fantasy.
Yeah, the principle stands. So I hope that's helpful. I mean, ultimately, like, you know, the thing that you write first may not necessarily be the thing that you have to write for forever, but, like, you better believe that Pierce Brown better keep churning out commercial YA kind of crossover, because that's the thing
fiction
that he hit huge for. So, you know, you sort of have to think about it a little bit that
that's
way.
That's why he just signed a 3-book deal for more books in that world.
Yeah. And ultimately, like, I mean, I don't know who he was querying before for the YA sci-fi, but, you know, if he's writing an adult space opera and he has sci-fi stories published, if he queried those same agents who responded positively to the YA sci-fi and said, like, look, I've got an adult sci-fi and I've got all these, like, bona fides, you know, that actually would, you know, speak well to me. Like, okay, well, you came back to me with something that I can actually sell. So,
Yeah. Honestly, partly this is my own bias in that I don't like science fiction nearly as much as I like fantasy. But yeah, that's
feelings in space. That's why I love it.
I don't know why I don't like it as much. But it's one of those weird things. Science fiction and romance just can't do it.
Weirdo.
I try sometimes. I really liked Battlestar Galactica. But I am much more open to considering adult science fiction than I am to YA science fiction, just because it's hard. It's a hard genre.
Yeah.
And so if people liked it but didn't want to represent it, they may be much more open to an adult novel from you.
Yeah. Okay, moving along. So we had a, not really a question, but a comment on Tumblr from Shadow Song saying, I'm trying to catch up on your older episodes while I'm at work. Not a question, but I figure you two would enjoy hearing your podcast. It's almost doubled my to-read list on Goodreads.
Yes! Yay! I'm so glad to hear that.
That makes us so happy because, you know, ultimately we want you guys to enjoy what you're
yes.
reading. So we have a question from A Cool Shades Anon. I've been working with my agent for a little over a year, and for the most part, I'm really happy with her. But I feel like whenever I come to her with my anxieties, concerns, neurotic crap, she ignores my emails. I don't expect my agent to fix my life and or be my fluffer. Someone's been watching New Girl. But ignoring me when I... Am I your emotional fluffer? But ignoring me when I admit I'm having... ignoring me when I admit I'm having trouble with the book because I've lost my perspective / confidence / haven't been sleeping doesn't make things better. If anything, it reinforces my belief that I suck and no one cares. For what it's worth, because I know I sound totally needy right now, in the year we've been working together, we've exchanged maybe 17 emails. Only 3 were, hey, I'm totally freaking out here emails. Throwing that out there in case you want to run away in horror, thinking I'm constantly begging for validation. Mm-hmm. Usually it's a last resort thing when the book is due and I've been looking at it for so long it doesn't make sense, and reaching out is the only way I know how to get the damn thing done in time. Well, I think that this is another thing that sort of falls under the umbrella of, like, y'all gotta sit down and talk about it. I would say, you know, if you can find a place or find a time when you're sort of between books, when you're maybe in the early drafting stages of something.
Yes. Not a week before your deadline.
Not a week before your deadline. Because, you know.
Or, you know, 6 months after your deadline.
6 months after your deadline. You know, bring it up and say, you know, hey, you know, I know, you know, I'm really happy with a lot of what we're doing together. I just want to touch base and talk about this thing that's concerning me, which is, you know, this issue of emotional support around the time of the deadline. You know, and you can ask point blank, like, do you find these emails annoying? Like, because I would rather know so that you can sort of, like, decide how much that's valuable to you. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they definitely need to know. I mean, at the same time, like, I don't know if you have a, you know, writer's group or something that you can lean on instead, because the other thing to take into account is that, like, just as you are stressed with the book, the agent is also stressed because they're sort of watching it from afar and they can't do anything.
Yes.
And I know several agents who just don't want to get involved in their clients' personal lives at all, mm-hmm. which means that they sort of, like, take a step back whenever there's any kind of, like, sort of emotional sort of stuff going on, because it's like, this is not my purview.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. It's, I think that it might help you to establish a group of people who are there for you when you're having the emotional meltdown.
Yeah.
Which is a thing that we all need in our own lives for various reasons.
Lord knows I've got one.
Yep.
Bridget just patted me on the shoulder.
So
my sister's like, where are you?
So make sure that you have a group of people who you can go to and say, I am doing this thing and it's driving me crazy and I'm so stressed out and upset and I don't know how to deal with it. Sometimes just having the people that you can say that to will help solve the problem.
Yeah. Because a lot of times, you know, especially, you know, when my authors reach out and they're saying, like, I'm freaking out, they want to be heard. They just want to hear that someone has heard their concerns and that, you know, they're going to get through it. Because, you know, these are valid feelings, like, especially, you know, when you're in revisions and you're like, I've read this book 90 times.
I hate it now.
Whole thing is garbage. I'm garbage. Publishing is garbage. I'm going to throw myself off a building. You know.
We've all been there.
Yeah, I know. So I hope that's helpful. And you know, I feel like, you know, pursue both of those strands at once.
Yes.
You know, definitely talk to your agent and also definitely find a support system a little closer to home.
Yeah. It may just be that your agent wants to have a more distant professional relationship.
Which is fine. And if you feel like the sort of commercial side of things has been going well enough that you can keep that relationship, you know, then awesome. But if you feel like this is an important enough part of.
Yeah. Of your,
if you feel like this is overshadowing everything else, then maybe it's time to stop worrying where you're going, move on. Twitter is amazing. Okay, so we have a couple of sort of suggestions of things from Twitter that we can talk about for a hot minute. Actually, maybe we can do this on a separate episode, more about wish lists, how agency market trends.
Oh yeah, sure.
Do we want to do that now, or do we want to do that in?
Let's do that in an episode.
Okay, cool. Well,
thanks for the idea,
TJ. Weird Dreamer 1 has given us a great idea for a future episode, so we will be talking about that next time. Candy Rolls Pool does ask for wine recommendations.
Well, I will say that this Bevy Pinot Grigio that I was drinking tonight is quite delicious. It's Bevy BEVI. And I have enjoyed it for two episodes now, because since Jen isn't drinking, I've only had half a bottle rather than sharing one with her.
Yeah.
So I recommend that.
I am really looking forward to it not being fucking cold as shit outside so that rosé season can start, because drinking rosé on a patio is my favorite summer activity. Like, fuck volleyball, I want to be on a patio drinking rosé.
Yes.
So someday that will happen, but it is not this day.
I was gonna say we should record an episode drinking rosé on a patio, but then I realized we live in New York and all of the patios also have cars driving by.
Yeah, so super loud.
This is not gonna work out.
Cars or, like, music or a bunch of people talking.
I think
recording a brunch, like a publishing brunch podcast, should be hilarious. Let's table that for
for the future. Just think about it.
Well, so what are you reading right now?
I am currently reading Beauty by Robin McKinley for my reread book club, which used to be my Tamara Pierce reread book club, but we finished all of those. So we're switching to Robin McKinley now. I am reading Beauty and going to read Rose Daughter so we can compare her to Beauty and the Beast retellings.
Mm-hmm.
I am finding that I like Beauty more than I did the first time I read it.
Mm-hmm.
It was published in 1978, and I can see how it shaped the trends and the way that people do YA fantasy now and the way they do fairy tale retellings now. It's huge. But it's also like, sort of, I can also see the things that annoyed me when I was a teenager, which is like, in the first five pages, she is...
Ow!
Oh, no!
Motherfucker! Jesus Lord. Oh, that hurt so much. My funny bone fell.
Jen just hit her funny bone on my desk. I'm sorry, Jen.
It's okay.
So the first five pages of this book are basically spent establishing that the narrator's sisters are beautiful, but the narrator isn't. Which I think in like in 1978 in a fairy tale retelling that was new and different and interesting. But now I'm like, I have read this a thousand times.
Yeah.
And so I can look at it and say, okay, Robin McKinley does it better than 99% of other people, just because she is better than 99% of writers. But it's also sort of like, okay, so this thing is happening. Great. Yeah. And so it's interesting. And I think that Rose Daughter, so Beauty is told in first person and Rose Daughter is told in third person.
Why is my phone ringing? Oh my God. We're just having a really noisy time tonight.
We are. This is my, my college asking for money.
Bless. I know. I can always tell when it's Mount Holyoke. I'm like, oh, it's 413.
Providence.
Bless.
No, thank you.
Aw. I do give them money, but,
yes, I don't want to talk to them about it. So,
my God,
what is happening?
It's the silly season over here at Shipping and Handling. Rose Daughter, third person.
Rose Daughter's in third person. And so because so much of YA fantasy now is written in first person, I feel like the third person perspective feels a lot fresher than the first person. I feel less like I've read this a thousand times before because people aren't really writing in third person right now.
Yeah.
Personally, I like third person. I think in large part because I read so much Robin McKinley when I was young. But yeah, I will be interested to see how I feel about Rose Daughter when I reread it next. What are you reading, Jen?
Well, I just finished Falling Free by Lois McMaster-Bujold. And
what was that like?
It was great. You should listen to the podcast to find out what we thought about it. Let me check Goodreads. I think that might have been the last book I finished.
Because you finished it today.
Because I finished it today, but I think I didn't do a whole lot of reading since the last time we talked. Yeah, no, that was the last one I finished. That was the most. Whatever. I haven't read anything new.
We recorded only a week ago.
Only a week ago.
It's not like we've read four books since then.
True. I am about 50 pages into my reread of Busman's Honeymoon.
Okay.
Because it's perfect. And yeah, that's it.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I guess that is it for tonight. Yes. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We had something like 300 downloads of last week's episode in the first,
24 hours.
You know, it was really nice to see that this podcast is resonating with people. I have put in our application to be syndicated through Stitcher. So if you are an Android user and you've been listening to this podcast like on the web browser or something,
or downloading it, putting it on your phone,
hopefully that will make it a little bit easier for you. So we'll let you know when that actually goes up. But otherwise, if you have questions, comments, concerns, suggestions, at Ship and Handling on Twitter or shippingandhandlingpodcast@gmail.com or in our Ask Box on Tumblr where you can ask anonymously. And if you would like to participate in the Lois McMaster-Bujold book club, the next book will be Shards of Honor. And we will be discussing that on June 13th.
Yes. So you got a good month.
Good month.
Get it and read it.
Get it and read it.
It's
and
like 225 pages, so you should be able to do that.
Nice. And if you, we hope that you will interact with the book club. So the hashtag that we're using is SH Book Club, and that'll work on Twitter and on Tumblr.
Yep.
So,
and on Tumblr, at least for sure, no one else is using it. The only person who's ever posted on it is us.
it's us.
So you won't get confused with anyone else.
Indeed. Alrighty, well, on that note, happy reading. Bye.
Bye.